Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say, no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode. Well, ladies and gents, welcome back to another episode. Today we have the quite amazing Jake Baraclough, to be honest with you. He's over in Japan. Did he run all the way to Japan? Well, we're going to find out. That's what many of you will know him as. But you also know him as the crazy man who does a lot of miles. But we're hoping to get an insight into his career, but also an insight into Japanese culture and what he has coming up as well. I think this one's been long overdue. But Jake, firstly, how are you doing? I was just mentioning, has it all gone quiet in Tokyo? Now everyone's left, the champs are over.
Yeah, man. It's quieted down a bit. It was good fun though, wasn't it? So we actually met up while you were over here, caught up. But yeah, I was excited to get the call up finally for this one. I said though, I mentioned it to my mates and they were like, oh, you might be the worst ever runner they've had on. Because I feel like usually you get some big, big dogs on here. I was thinking, shit, yeah, I'm definitely, you must be scraping the barrel for guests, but no, I'm glad I got the call up.
Do you know what though? I disagree. A 63-minute half, I think that's pretty, what would that equate to on the tracks? But yeah, but we're not just here for the running, we're here for the personality, mate. So yeah, let's make it a goodie. It has gone quiet. The weather's cooled down. You were just talking about, I mean, for those, let's maybe start with the weather, because I think for those watching the World Champs, it was just extreme humidity until like the last day or two at the championships. And when we caught up, I was amazed that you were still getting work done in that weather, because it was unbearable.
Yeah, it's one of those where I feel like until you come here, you don't properly appreciate how bad it is. Yeah. Like I'm always in my videos saying like, this is genuinely the worst place on earth in summer, but it's hard to actually comprehend how bad it is until you try and, yeah, slog out. I mean, every run's a hard run in summer. Like, there's no such thing as an easy jog when you're just, it's like you're running in a sauna. Like, there's no escape. You can't breathe, dripping in sweat. Like, I can lose, like, 5 kg on a run, just like an easy run, like a long run. Yeah. Before. That's definitely doing some damage.
What are your paces? Like, for, you know, to help out with people who maybe go to humid climates in the future, how much are you adjusting your pace on an easy run, on a tempo, on, you know, intervals?
I mean, easy running, I'm pretty much just running off feel all the time. Yeah. So like, I run pretty slow anyway, but do you want it in Ks or minute miling?
What are most people working? Probably Ks these days.
Because I'm a Ks
The UK's
man.
Gone full, yeah, the UK's gone full
over.
Ks. Yeah.
Has it? All right, finally. Well, seen the light.
The circles I'm in, it feels like that. Yeah, not many are still operating miles.
I can try and switch between, but now I'm like easy days, 4:30 to 5 minute Ks. So that's like maybe 7:20 to 8 minute miling. Mm. It's pretty slow. And that's like a lot of my mileage. I think when you're hitting really big mileage, that's the only way you can do it if it's like a proper jog. And yeah, in summer, that's pushing towards a slower end. But then I noticed on like tempo runs, for example, like maybe in summer, I'm killing myself to do 50Ks, like 5:20 miling. And then just 1 week later, so like this week, it's finally cooled down a bit. And it's suddenly like, it's no problem, like 5 minute flat. So it's crazy the difference it does make. And I'm useless. Like, I'm a pale ginger guy. So like, I'm not exactly built for this climate.
So yeah, about 20 seconds a mile is that humidity conversion, if you like. But it change. Yeah. It changed like almost overnight, didn't it? Like the rainstorm came in and then it was like, it was just fresh the next day. It was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping it stays like this now. It's always like we could get hit with another wave out of anywhere, but yeah, hopefully it's all good.
So we understand, obviously, Tokyo is brutal to train in the summer, but it is amazing. The perks to it, when I spoke to you, you said it's amazing in the winter.
It's unreal. I don't think I could ever go back to a depressing, grey British winter. After experiencing it here, you get probably 4 months where it's just sunny every single day. Like, don't see a cloud in the sky. Unreal running weather, like, nice and cool. So I think that's kind of the marathon season, like marathon / Ekiden season. Yeah. It's a little bit tight because, yeah, the rest of the year when it is this hot, it's racing's pretty much off the cards. But then you get maybe from November through to sort of April, it's like prime. And there's just every week, marathons, one in 61, 62, half marathons, sorry, full marathons in like, 210. It's just like standard procedure every single week. Sack field, it's like crazy running out here.
No, that's good to hear that you have that trade-off. Yeah, there are periods where it is pleasurable. Mate, let's start right from the beginning though. I'm a university student, Bedford and County boy. How have you ended up in Japan? And I guess, you know, what did running mean to you during those days? When you were at Birmingham, when you were, you know, at the club, Bedford, what did running mean for you in those days?
So like way back at Bedford times, when I'm maybe like 13, 14, at that point I was like really into the running. Pretty much, yeah, at that point, dreaming of like Olympics, world champs, that kind of, like, I wanted to be a pro runner back in the day. And then I had this chest problem, took ages trying to diagnose it. And at that point, your running had been going well at Bedford County. And then it kind of just got to a point where I just couldn't run at all, just getting this like stabbing pain in my chest. And I was seeing all these different people, like heart specialists, physios, doctors, everyone. And then after, it probably took a year and a half at least to try and diagnose it. And it was this condition with one of my arteries, like coming off my heart, was constricted, like being blocked off by muscles. So like the blood wasn't flowing properly. And I either had the choice where I could just stop running and I'd be fine, like living a normal life with it, or I could have surgery and cut away all this muscle, clear it up, basically allow the blood to flow. And then I should be able to get back to running. There was no decision whatsoever. Yeah, I was going through the surgery. I had it once and then it came back again. So I had to go round two. So this was pretty much from 14 to 18. Couldn't run really at all. And at that point, yeah, all I wanted to do was run. I'm absolutely loving it. But I was just completely sidelined with this problem. And then it was only kind of at uni, I think just before going to uni, I'd managed to get back into it. And was running sort of pain-free. But obviously, like, I'm in no shape whatsoever. Like, I've not run in 4 years. During that time, started mixed martial arts. So I put on a fair bit of upper body muscle and was loving the MMA. I was managing to do that pain-free. And then going to Birmingham Uni, like, yeah, huge running scene there. Like, got the running club and everything. And I got stuck in with that more probably on the social side. Love a good night out back in the day, sports nights. The running was, like, secondary. That was more just, yeah, you... all your mates are there, you rock up, so much fun. Like, still, like, probably the best memories. Like, yeah, it's some of the best times I've ever had back at Birmingham. But during that time, I'm kind of running, doing MMA, hitting the nights out, attending the odd lecture here and there. But it was like, yeah, there definitely wasn't the sort of idea of when I was younger, like going pro at running. It just seemed like after missing so much that time as well, that I just felt like I was just out of it. Like, there was no way I was going to be able to get back to that point, and probably wasn't, giving it everything as well. So yeah, it shifted a little bit.
Shifted. But then, you know, somewhere along the road, you end up in Japan. So talk us through that. You leave Birmingham University and then you went to America for a bit as well, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. I saw the 2 year free holiday as the dream. Like, I can't believe they're paying. It's crazy, like, genuinely, that you don't even have to be that good a runner. So I think I put in a little bit of effort my final year at Birmingham, ran like a 15 5k, and that was enough to go to like an NAIA, maybe similar to like a D2 kind of uni out there, like fully covered, all funded. It's like, yeah, this is the dream. Go out there, still doing my MMA because they love it in America. And then it was just right at the end of that that they had at nationals. So for the NAIA, they had a marathon like with outdoor track, was it like attached to it? Do you know in the NCAA, it's just...
Just it's the 10,000.
Yeah, they've just... That's it, the 10,000. Whereas they just randomly, I don't know why, for NAIA put this marathon in. And I thought, it kind of sounds like fun. I might as well just give it a go. I think it was quite easy, the entry standard, probably because no one at college wants to run a marathon. And then it was just training for that. I started hitting sort of 100-mile weeks, 160K, 180K, that kind of thing. I was like, oh, it's actually kind of quite fun. And during that time, I listened to the audio book, The Way of the Runner, you know, at Haranan Finn. Yes, classic, like all about the Japanese running scene. And it was just through that that I learned about like how stacked it is out here, these crazy races. Mm-hmm. Like the Ekiden, and how they just basically bloody love it here. Like they're obsessed. And then just coming off the back of that marathon that I did in the States, I was like, oh, I actually want to give this a proper go. I think I must have been maybe 25 at that point. And thought, all right, it's enough time messing around. I'm going to quit MMA, actually give running a go, like see where I can get to at that point, and move out to Japan to see what all the hype's like, what's going on here? Why are they so good? And that's pretty much the story, concise.
How did the marathon go? I'm just intrigued. How'd that first marathon go?
I actually won it. So maybe it's good prep for out here, but it was in like 35 degrees. Jeez. So it was, and like super humid. It was right on the Gulf Shore. So like similar weather to like Miami, Florida, that kind of thing. Luckily though, my uni was similar weather. Like we were right down south. Yep. So like half the field literally DNF'd. It's just like bodies littering the course. And I kind of, because I'd prepped all, I'd done all the heat training and all of that, just ran it sort of steady and ran. I mean, the standard's so weak in comparison. It was like 2:38, I think, to win. So like, I mean, yeah, it's just, it's still like, it's not exactly moving, but that was, the debut. And I've never won a marathon since. So I guess I peaked. I peaked early.
That's actually quite impressive. It's a hard thing to do is to win a marathon, I would say, especially when you're based in Japan. Goodness me. So yeah, then I guess you head out to Japan. How did you head out to Japan? How was that feasible? Were you on a sort of like a Japanese language program, weren't you?
Yeah. I thought I'd make the use of another scholarship, live for free again.
But this is a business idea for you. So yeah, help people get scholarships, man. You're pretty good at it.
Oh, it's too good. Yeah, I'm like, never want to get a 9-to-5. But it was like, well, I moved out here, this scholarship program called Daiwa, a scholarship. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's nothing actually to do with sport at all. People apply from all different, like doctors, lawyers, bankers, whatever. And you just had to show how you were going to bridge the gap between the UK and Japan. So like through whatever your field is. And so I literally said for running, I wanted to come out here, learn what they're doing in Japan. Like, why is it so popular? Why are you getting 50 million people watching a relay race every year when we can't feel like you can't get 100 people on the sideline of like national champs or whatever back home? Like, it's just completely different. So that was my sort of angle. I managed to get on this program. I treated it as well as like, you had to do like a fair bit of language course like at university, but compared to working like a 9-to-5, 40-hour weeks, training around it was a lot easier. So I could properly go all in with the running and basically train like a pro, which is what I wanted to just throw everything at it.
Mate, on the Ikidens, I've got my own ideas, but you've been out there, you've been surrounded in that environment. Why is Ikiden so popular in Japan?
Yeah, so it's all like the massive one is Hakone Ikiden. It's like every year, so their New Year's, it's a bit like our Christmas back home. It's sort of everyone's at home with their family and it's like a national kind of holiday, and that's when the Ekiden falls. And it's this huge, pretty much televised event. And I think they've turned like a solo sport running, which is pretty predictable as well. Like these major marathons, you're watching it and it's like, okay, one of these Kenyans, Ethiopians, they're going to win. Also, you don't know anything about them. You see them for 2 hours and then you never hear of them again. So there's no storytelling, there's no intrigue. It's like, who cares? To be honest, like, how are you meant to get invested in these people? Whereas here, it's like the whole, all the different teams all season have like cameras in their camps. They've got all this footage, all this backstory to then create like different angles, different rivalries. And I think the closest thing to Ekiden, I'd say, is probably the Tour de France. So you know, you've got like races within races, like there's all the team tactics because it's like super team based. And there's different stages in the Ekiden. So you have like a hill specialist, you put him on the hill leg. There's like a downhill leg. There's a foreigner leg, which is where all these like Kenyans and Ethiopians are just absolutely ripping. So there's all these sort of different elements that just make it so much more interesting, I think, than like a standard race. So it's actually sick to watch. Like when you, especially as you start understanding a bit more Japanese, like mine's still pretty broken, but I feel like I'm getting more and more into it the more I learn.
It's impressive that you, how long have you been out there now? Two years?
So yeah, it's bang on, yeah, 2 years now.
Bang on 2 years. It is impressive how much Japanese you've learned. What were those first few months like? I couldn't imagine it, you know, going to completely new country where you didn't know anyone on the ground, or did you?
Nah. So I came out on this scholarship program. There was like five of us, maybe. So we all came out together. But then to be honest, I didn't see that much of them because I felt like my interest was just completely different.
Yeah.
Like these guys, yeah, they're like a couple lawyers, like some scientists, doctors. I'm like, I just want to go for a run. So like my sort of angle was, yeah, maybe a bit unique.
Wow. What were those first few months like then? Or I mean, how long did it take you to truly settle in and feel a part of a community? Or are you still not? You're still not there?
I feel like it's a constant battle. The language barrier is obviously, I mean, I love it. So this feels like home, definitely. But like my Japanese is still painfully bad with everyday stuff. So like yesterday I had to go I had to fill in some pension thing. I had to go to like the local office. And it's like suddenly I get put in that environment and I don't know a word. Like I'm just seeing all these Japanese squiggles and paper. I'm like, what does this mean? But then get me chatting about running and it's like, I'm like fluent. So there's like this weird, where it's like, I've got my niche. I can chat about running, food, I guess.
Yeah.
But then it is sick. And I think, at the start, pretty much like a week of moving here, I managed to find the best like amateur team in Tokyo. So sort of a bunch of like ex-pro runners, ex like Ekiden runners, so good level, maybe a bunch of like 220 or sort of 218 marathoners, and just jumped in with them. And so that was like a perfect Japanese practice. Obviously like running as well, like having these runners at the time were way better than me, just dragging me around. So that was pretty class. And then I had the uni as well, where I was taking classes with other foreigners because it was like this language program. So then like at least I get a bit of English chat and stuff there as well. So I didn't feel like it was this. It was obviously so different, but I wasn't like, I felt like it was good fun. Like, it was a fun challenge.
Let's talk about the running side, because you jumped in with that group and, you know, you were famous. Actually, let's talk about YouTube, because did you start that up at the same time you moved over there to document your journey?
It was a year later. I had the plan of like, because I saw it as this massive gap in the market. Like no one's making content in English about Japanese running. I was like, oh, this could be a good niche. But then I ended up being so busy with the language school and in my own training, I just had no free time around that to actually do the YouTube. So it was only after finishing that 1 year program that I kickstarted YouTube pretty much a year ago now. See, I've been pumping out the weekly videos.
And doing a good job as well, because I think it's not just talking about Japanese running. Now people are invested in your story and they're invested in learning about the culture of Japan, specifically that running culture.
Yeah, I guess I thought just sort of put everything out there, like pretty much just tell my story, because that's what running's missing. That's why it's really hard to root and like get behind anyone when you just know nothing about them. So I think just trying to show people literally what I'm doing. Like, I don't know what level I'll be able to get to, but just purely going all in, throwing everything at it and just showing you what I'm doing out here. People seem to have got behind it.
People's ideas of all in can be different. What was your initial idea of going all in?
Oh, before even moving there, the plan was literally like push the boundary. Because the way I see it is, like, so originally, as before I'd even moved here, I was like, marathon is going to be the thing for me because I've got no wheels on the track. Like painfully slow over like 800, 400 back in the day. So I was like, we've got to go long here. And then I'm looking at the top marathon runners, so like Phil Sessman, Hamid Mohammed, they're still rapid on the track. Like they're still competitive over K, 5K. Like they've got obviously serious talent there. And that's something that I just don't have the wheels for. So I'm like, how am I possibly going to change that, close that gap? Like if I train the same as them, if I just copy the training of the top guys, there's still going to be this massive talent gap, this massive difference. So I thought, okay, I just have to train harder than them. Like, and luckily, I think my biggest talent is the durability. I'd never get injured. My legs, maybe it's the MMA from just years of getting just kicked to pieces, like absolutely battered, but it's like strengthening the legs up. But I seem to just be able to handle huge mileage. So I was looking at guys like Cam Levins and like the old school Japanese boys hitting 280K a week, like 175 miles. And just thought, yeah, I'm just going to give that a go, see if I can handle it. So far, managed to survive.
You surprised yourself how much you can handle?
Yeah. It was a massive gamble because I saw it at the time when I moved here. Yeah, I'm a 72-minute half marathoner, a 2:38 marathoner. Like at that point, I have no idea what the ceiling is. So I sort of just thought, I'll just hammer this mileage. And yeah, it seemed to be coping right with it.
In 2 years, you've gone from a 72 to a 63.
Along with dropping maybe 20 kg of muscle, I've now got the skinny little runner arms.
Really?
When I ran that 72.
Have you lost 20 kilos?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Really, yeah. Because back in the, like when I was, even when I did that marathon in the States, I was still training MMA 3 hours a day and then running around that. So I was probably training harder back then than I do now. Yeah. Like if you think about the whole thing. But then, yeah, obviously when you're doing MMA, you're like, it's a really different strength-based sport. So just dropping a few pounds, it helps a lot.
Wow. At the moment, you've been trying to, or recently, shall I say, you've been trying to break into to a Japanese Ekiden team. Are you at the stage, obviously you've been self-coaching for the last couple of years, right? Are you at the stage where you'd want to get a coach? You'd want to be a part of a team? Or are you still very happy taking care of yourself?
From the day I came out here, I wanted to join a team. It's just the actual practicality of that's a slight issue. Like my university team was like quality, like one of the top Ekiden teams. So you've got, I think their starting lineup, like 10 runners at college. The average half marathon time's about 63 minutes. So like absolutely ridiculous. But then they had like a no foreigner policy. So they're like a classic traditional old school Japanese style. And like they don't have any Kenyans or anything on their team. Never have and clearly never will because, yeah, I was told like, yeah, it's not happening. And then even now, it's just a battle. Like I've been speaking to a load of teams. Recently, I went on a training camp for the last month with one of these teams and that was unreal. So like, yeah, I'm desperate to try and get training partners because I noticed so much just how quickly I can improve getting like dragged along by faster guys. But yeah, it's a constant battle trying to like weasel my way into a team.
Because there's not really any, correct me if I'm wrong, but they do have obviously sort of amateur clubs, but there's not many sort of amateur coaches, is there?
Yeah, it's sort of this gap where it's like amateur runners, maybe if you're like a 220 guy or over for the marathon, there'll be people you can train with, like there's amateur groups, but all the top runners are part of either uni teams or these company sponsored teams. Mm. And there's like hundreds and hundreds of elite runners, but it's just, they're so like exclusive, like they're their own little bubbles and like no one shares anything. No one's open to people just jumping in training with them. It's like everyone's like really closed off. And the challenge you got is you can only have one foreigner on each team. It's like this rule or like on their starting 11. And every team basically has like an Olympic level Kenyan. So like I think I'd have to break the British 10K record just to get on a team as like their starting runner. It is a joke.
So basically there's no sub-elite culture. Whereas I feel like the UK has a massive sub-elite culture, a very small elite culture. And obviously, there's a large amateur market as well. Whereas Japan is the opposite. It has a huge elite culture, hardly any sub-elites. You're probably one of a handful. And then obviously, big amateur scene as well.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it's because of the club scene back home.
Yeah.
Because like you've got those clubs, whereas they don't really have, it's more, you have a university team and then a pro team, and then it's sort of amateur, teams around that. But yeah, it's a bit tricky.
I mean, those elite teams in Japan as well, they train at such a level that you just can't replicate that as an amateur. And it's probably why there's a lack of sub-elites. And they have a really hard sort of work-life balance as well once they go into full-time work, don't they?
Yeah, it's brutal. Even like they are. Oh, it's killer. Yeah, that's why I'd never work for a Japanese company. I'm like, stay clear. Yeah, like 9 to 9. And then you've got to do overtime and, oh, yeah, it's killer.
Don't you only leave when your sort of senior leaves as well?
Yeah, that genuinely is. Like, if your boss is there till 10 p.m, you've got to stay as well.
Yeah. So the big boss has to leave and then the one below. If you're sort of 10 down the pecking order, you're never getting out of that place.
Yeah, you're screwed. Basically, your life is work. That's it.
So, mate, let's get into it. What's your typical week? I think, you know, you obviously do share it with everyone, you document it, but for those who don't know, like, run us through a typical week, man.
Yeah. Training. Oh, so at the moment, it's pretty much for this marathon block I'm in. It would be averaging about, aiming for like 280k a week, 175 miles. And recently I started putting in some triple days. So usually it'd be 2 to 3 triple days a week. And then all the rest are double days, no recovery days. Yeah, can't be having that. I've kind of gone off a bit of, I wouldn't say there's like a set, you know, back home, it's more like, or maybe you do your track stuff Wednesday, your marathon stuff Friday, your long run Sunday. For me, it's a bit more scattered, kind of just fitting in where it makes sense, like building a sort of training plan, because I race a lot as well. So I've got actually starting this weekend, like 8 races in 8 weeks. But a lot of them are sort of training races, like hard efforts. So maybe each week I'll have, like a half marathon or even a full marathon. That will be my like big session for the week. And then I'll always try and do something on the track. Recently, maybe like 10 by K or something like half marathon effort, maybe some 3K reps, 2K reps, whatever. And then the other session might be a long run, some hills. So yeah, it's a bit varied. I wouldn't say there's like a super set structure. Overarching theme is just the mileage, because I think the individual sessions themselves, they're not the be all end all. Like, you can almost do anything relatively, like, yeah, hit your big tempos, the marathon stuff, but it's more just keeping that volume up consistently. And that's going to get you 90% of the way there for the marathon, I reckon. And just, yeah, surviving that. Like, so on the triple days, I tend to at the moment do them on my like recovery days, easy days. So it's like a good way to get in a K of work, 25 miles, but do that like the day before a big session or the day after. And weirdly, I've actually got used to it, because I mean, at the start, I was like kind of exhausted. You feel like basically you finished a run, I've showered, eaten, and then I'm getting ready for my next run. And you're just repeating that. There's not a lot of time outside of it. But I do find it's a nice way to get big volume in without killing yourself. Like, you're breaking it up, you're refueling in between, and I'm just ticking over the mileage. It's just sort of, part of the routine now.
Man, it's a good job you're a professional. But, I mean, when Kipchum came along and there was rumors about him hitting sort of 300K, 250 to 300K, that must have filled you with a bit of confidence that actually maybe there is some sense to the madness.
Yeah, I wonder how much extra help he was getting, say, for, don't know, some of those sessions, whether they're legit or what, but if they were, that's some superhuman, almost impossible recovery powers. But then you see, like, the Japanese guys, they've been doing it for 50 years.
Yeah.
Like, they were doing it before the super shoes and stuff. Like, they're doing it in plimsolls. So I'm looking at that. You've got, like, these old school, even the women especially, they were hitting 300 tiny little slippers effectively. Mm. And it's like, if they were doing it, we've got all this massive fat cushioning on our shoes now. Surely we can do it now. But it's weird that it's almost gone the other way. And maybe there's like a resurgence in high mileage. You see guys like Cam Levins, like, I'm a massive fan of him. He kind of inspired my triple days recently, but he's like a 280K week man, and he's the best ever North American. Probably he might be even the best non-African born marathoner ever, but he's ran like 204 or something. So he's clearly showing that the higher mileage does work.
Good question, man. What's Cam Levins' run? I always had down like Ryan Hall or something, 204, 59.
But thing is, Ryan Hall was on a downhill. So like, I don't think it's official. Yeah. In Boston, maybe.
What's Levins' PB? 2.5, 2.5.36. That is going to be up there for
sure. Quicker than Conor Mance.
Yeah.
Pretty mad.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's got to be up there on the North American rankings for sure. And like 27.0, 10K, like... Yeah, I mean, it's just, I do think there was a narrative for a long time, quality over quantity, for a long time, especially in the UK. And I think, you know, the results the proof is in the pudding a little bit. When you actually get into it and you look at Japanese running, I know they have the Ikidens, which is a huge, just a huge support system for these runners. And they get to train in mass as well versus the UK, where you've got people training in sort of pockets of, you know, three or four or five athletes. I mean, last year, it was an Olympic year, probably, you know, our best marathon year in a long time with guys running 2.6, 2.7, 2.8. But we had four sub 2.10. I mean, in Japan, they had 34 people break 2.10. And, you know, but what's interesting, though, is out of that 34, I think there was only like four or five of them who actually ran outside of Japan. So there is like this, Japanese people do not leave Japan to race.
I found out about this the other day. It's basically all the Japan Federation. So it's so stupid. So for all their qualifying races, like Olympics, World Champs, they have a trials race. And to get into that, you have to hit a certain time. It's crazy high level. But they have different times. So if you run in a foreign race, to just get into their qualifier, you've got to run a 2:06:30 or under. Whereas if you do it in a home race, it's like 2:09. So they massively incentivize. And I think it's because they get money when Japanese runners run at home. So they have these couple races around Japan that pretty much, if you want to run in their Olympics, their trials, everyone, you have to do them. Otherwise, yeah, you could come third in a world major, run a 2:06:40, and you can't even make their trials race. Like, it's a joke. So that's kind of why everyone's just running here.
Okay, that makes sense. Didn't they incentivize where they wanted the depth and of Japanese running to improve? They wanted to pull that top end up a little bit as well. Didn't they say if you break a Japanese record, this was a few years ago, that you'll get $500,000, I think it's about equivalent of $500,000, like X amount of millions of yen?
Yeah, it's not bad. It's that you can see the incentive there. I think it might even still be about, yeah, I think you...
Is that still a thing?
I think so, yeah. They absolutely love it. I mean, you got to run a 2:04:40 maybe. I think that's what their record is.
Okay.
But yeah, everyone's trying to, yeah, smash that one.
Because that got introduced a few years ago, didn't it? And it did, it worked. Like, it really worked. Yeah. A lot of people invested, a lot of people were attacking the marathon, and, you know, they've always had great depth, but to have sort of 30-odd guys sub 210 and 10 guys sub 207, it's pretty, it's pretty impressive.
Because I think the biggest thing as well is every single talented runner in Japan is running the marathon. Whether they'd potentially be better at 1500, like someone's naturally an 800 meter runner, doesn't matter. At university, they're doing the half, and then after that, they're doing the full. So you got, I think in the UK, like you look at the rankings for like 5K, 10K, 15, they're destroying Japan, like absolutely destroying us, not even close. But then it's not translating at all in the UK. I think it's a combo of people not training properly for the marathon, maybe prioritizing quality, which I guess works for the track, but I don't think you can get away with 100 mile weeks or whatever if you're trying to be a 2:08 guy. Like, you have to, from a young age, be putting in huge volume, build up that lifetime mileage, which is what they're doing from like middle school. Like, genuinely, they're every single runner pretty much is double daying from middle school onwards. So you think they're just got so much more mileage in the legs by the time they actually move to the marathon that it's such a good base that then most of the work's done, and then you're just putting that bit of marathon specific work on top.
Another thing which fascinates me about Japanese culture and running is, like, even take yourself, you know, you do all your running around pretty much the same park, and there's not much room in Tokyo to run. It is. How do you do it, man? It's incredible.
It's the mind games. Yeah, mental training. Tokyo's terrible for running. So bad. Yeah, just endless loops, these tiny little parks.
Yeah. But have you ever thought about moving outside of Tokyo then? Going somewhere where it's, I guess, a little bit more conducive to train, get the miles in?
Yeah, 100%. At the moment, so I'm speaking to a few of these teams. And pretty much wherever, I'm happy to go literally anywhere in the country. I don't care. As long as there's a team there that will let me train with them, I'll move to, yeah, wherever they are. Because none of them are central Tokyo. Which you probably realise why after coming here. You're like, yeah, it'd be a nightmare. So all the top teams are further out. Yeah, better running places.
Okay, yeah. Mate, let's fast forward then to the Brooksteel. Like, that's a huge achievement. I mean, did you ever think that, one, your running would get you there? And obviously, two, the support and the interest your YouTube channel has. And it has grown so much. Did you ever think it would sort of get to that level?
Yeah, I thought, kind of when I moved to Japan, I thought it was going to be near impossible to ever get to the point where I could make a career just from running. Like, it's so hard. You've got to be so, so good. Like, especially at that time, I'm so far off, like, with my times. But then I'm seeing YouTubers effectively living like pro runners. Like they've got all this time for training and all of that. But then they're running like 225 marathons, 230 marathons. So I saw that as, oh, that's an angle where I can train like a pro, get everything out of myself, but I don't need to be elite level. And then naturally, as I've got fitter and stuff, like always running's come first. Like that's my number one priority. And then YouTube's like the support there. So yeah, I mean, if I was just a 214 marathoner, there's no way I'd have got this deal I've got with Brooks. Yeah, no chance. Whereas actually leveraging the YouTube there, because like luckily they've sort of seen the interest and seen the value, I guess, in YouTube, which a lot of other brands that I'm speaking to, they're just clueless, where all they want is a 206 marathoner who has no public interest, no appeal. Like I can't see how they're selling shoes. But luckily, yeah, Brooks kind of took a gamble and we're like, yeah, every week, what, 100,000 people are seeing a video of mine. So it's like, if I'm like wearing Brooks kit, rocking that there, there's got to be some value for them, you'd think. So yeah, big up Brooks for taking the gamble.
Yeah, and I guess you're leveraging that Japanese market as well, because they hardly exist over there, right?
Yeah, completely. So I think they're trying to grow exactly over here in like Japan, especially East Asia, because you never see anyone rocking Brooks ever in Japan. So I guess, yeah, hopefully I can push it a little bit here.
Are you getting 100,000 views on YouTube a week?
Pretty much. Close to, yeah.
That is mega.
It's crazy. No, I genuinely can't believe it. It is mad how quickly it's happened.
Do you ever, I mean, obviously when you start it, it's fun and, you know, you're loving it and you're sharing your story. Yeah. Does it ever become a chore? Do you ever sort of go, oh crap, what's the next video going to be? And you have to, you know, and you take on a lot more stresses because you're trying to deliver to 100,000 people instead of just being authentic.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely recently, I'd say because I'm running so much, like for example, like one of these triple days, it's genuinely hard to find time to even just put half an edit together, like film anything, because it does just feel like I'm, as well as all that running, every day I'm probably doing an hour, 2 hours of supplementary stuff. So like recovery, core, plyometrics, gym work, whatever it is, to try and stay injury free, like basically let me do that mileage. So then by the time you've done that, it really isn't a lot of time to then, because one of these videos, I think a lot of people don't realize how much time goes into. So I upload one video every week. I say the whole thing, like from scratch, like when you get the idea to then uploading it, it's probably 20 hours of work. So it's effectively like a part-time job.
Yeah.
And then running's the other part. And then I'm running 20 hours a week. So yeah, it's pretty busy. I've got help now from an editor who probably takes off half of that workload. So that's huge, because before that, it was like, yeah, it's pretty intense. Felt like there just wasn't a second free. But I do, yeah, it's good fun. And like, I do enjoy it, definitely. Like, yeah.
Good lad. Yeah, I mean, and I guess like editing isn't, that's probably your least favorite part, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've never dreamt of being in film or whatever. So that feels like a chore. The filming's great, but I love just chatting on camera. I chat about running all day. Yeah. But yeah, sitting behind editing for hours, not exactly thrilling.
Yeah. So 214, 63 at the moment for the half. Which one are you happy with? The 63?
Yeah. The 63, because that was mid-training block, like not real tapered. And I actually PB'd 1 week before that, where I broke 65 for the first time. And then I was like, oh, I'm just going to go out at 3 minute flats and just try and hold it. And I sort of was coming into shape at that point. And then actually after that, I'd hit some big marathon sessions and I was aiming for maybe like 210, 211 at Tokyo. So I think, yeah, actually the marathon's probably the least happy I've ever been after a race. Like, yeah, I wasn't exactly too happy with that one.
Did you have some problems in Tokyo when you did the marathon?
Oh yeah, it was a bit of a mess. It was a bit like London where all winter it's been cold and then suddenly there was this little spike. So it was like a 20 something degree day, which is about 20 degrees too warm for me. So I woke up 2 hours after the race in the medical tent, completely blacked out. I still don't know how I finished, but yeah, luckily managed somehow just claw my way to the finish, but it was messy.
When you're putting all these miles away and you're in training and stuff, do you have a pretty firm idea of what shape you're in, or do you just sort of like that get to a race and go, oh, I'm going to sit off a 3 minute case and see what happens here?
Oh, I feel like I'm pretty dialed in. A lot of the sessions now are like, I do a lot of stuff based around half marathon pace or marathon pace, so I can get an idea. Also looking at previous sessions. So because I'm repeating a lot, I can see, oh, a year ago, I ran this time for the half marathon and before it, I did 10 by a K on the track at this pace. And then I'm just looking, oh, last week, oh, I've ran 5 seconds a K quicker. So that should translate to a minute, 2 minutes over the half, so that kind of thing. So yeah, I feel like I've got a decent check.
Yeah, you don't use any sort of heart rate, any zones, do you? You just go to those race efforts and in and around them.
Yeah, it's far too scientific, far too sensible training. I'm on none of the threshold heart rate, none of that. Yeah, it's just riff it every time.
Good, good. Is that Japanese culture as well?
Yeah. They're pretty hard trainers.
Yeah.
I think nowadays it's changing a little bit. Some teams are doing the lactate, the double threshold. So it's been like, they've been influenced by the West, I think. But a lot of them are still very old school. You absolutely cane your sessions and then you just jog everything else around it.
Yeah. That's different when you read, where the runner and stuff like that and you hear snippets. That is kind of, how they train. I mean, mate, what's next? So you've obviously got these races coming up.
The suspense. But no, I've got two half marathons in the lead up to that big target marathon, which are going to be in Tokyo. So I want to try and smash my half PB, run a sub 210 marathon. Like, that's the goal. You've probably got to be in 62 something shape for the half. So that's pretty much, knock that out first. And then that'll give me a bit of confidence, going into the the secret marathon at the end.
The undersized. Exactly. Does it give you confidence that when you do check the British rankings time and time again, because the European standard is 209.30, right, for next year. And I think they're going to be able to take six athletes to the Europeans at Birmingham, which would be amazing. So you must be looking at that going, that's the goal, really. And it must give you confidence when you check the rankings and still there's only four men who have broken 210 in the last 18 months.
Yeah, it's crazy. Shoot, when I saw that came out, because originally I had in my head just that sub 210 barrier. It's such a clean one. But then seeing that, I'm like, what's another 30 seconds? I might as well try and target that because that would be unreal. Returning to Birmingham after my uni days, it'd be a legendary full circle moment there, homecoming. So yeah, I'm going all in pretty much on that.
Well, fingers crossed. And yeah, what's your opinion on the fact that we've only got sort of four guys, and even the same on the women's front, very few breaking sort of 226, 227, and on the men's front, very few breaking 210, which is now, wouldn't even be a European standard and quite a long way off the world standard.
Yeah, I think it's just too many lazy bastards, mate, back home. No one's putting in the effort. There should be hundreds. If you look at the 5K rankings, all those guys that have broken 14, they should be breaking 210. Like, if you look in Japan, that's how it works pretty much. But why are we not translating it? Clearly, people just aren't putting in the work. They're not training hard enough. And I feel like people could genuinely get a lot more out of themselves for the longer stuff by just hammering a whole lot more mileage.
Yeah, you are obliterating the norms. Because I feel like 100 mile weeks is still that sort of touch point where it's like, 100 mile weeks. And you've just smashed through that. But you've stayed healthy as well, which is crucial. Maybe you would have a different view if you'd had a lot of injuries over the last 2 years.
I know. It's such a weird one though. Because I'm thinking, like, when I was at uni at Birmingham and even childhood younger, maybe I'm running 60 miles a week, 100K a week. Yeah. And I'd get injured all the time, like calves, hammies, groin, hip, whatever, constant injuries. Like, I had surgeries on my hip, tore my calf endless times, all these things. But then as soon as I triple my mileage and just push through every little ache and stuff, it's so weird. Genuinely, my body's just adapted. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a weird anomaly. Yeah, I don't know. I think it is almost just conditioning over time. You just gradually keep pushing the boundaries. And instead of every time you get a little ache, stopping. I mean, this isn't probably the best advice. So I don't know if I'd recommend it, but that's what I did anyway. And it was just eventually I got to the point where I could hack the mileage and it just became normal.
No, I think there is an element as well of actually, like, when I was in Kenya, you see these guys and they don't even, like you say, they do a triple day, but they don't really count their first run of the day. That's what they do to wake up. And then they go and train at 10 and 4 and stuff like that. And they would run like, 208 guys, 210 guys for the marathon. And that's 210 in Kenya. So they're probably worth a lot quicker than that. And they would run really, really slowly. And it's kind of like, you wouldn't get injured from doing an hour's walk, right? And they're doing, you know, they're not going much quicker. Like the impact on their body is probably pretty similar to if they were just going for a walk, the way they're moving and the way they're just shuffling along. You know, I think there is an element of sometimes people just don't, if you're trying to get those real high miles, I mean, you said it, you do have to run. You have to do a lot of it very slow.
That was actually the biggest thing when I was building up, because I had this hip surgery maybe 6 months before moving to Japan. So I was starting completely from scratch, like 0 miles. I hadn't ran a mile in 8 months, I think it was. So I started from zero and just every week built it up, but didn't worry about the sessions at all. So like, didn't try and smash the track, didn't try and rip tempos, didn't care about my paces, like literally jogged it all. And then eventually just went, yeah, from zero to 100 mile weeks. And then just kept pushing it. At that point, I started implementing a few sessions here and there. But again, it wasn't like, I didn't care what pace I was running. That was secondary. It was more just, let's get to the point where I can handle the mileage and then I can put in the quality that I need. Because even now, what, 60 to 80% of my week is jogging. So it's like, I need that foundation first before I start worrying about all the extras.
Mate, it's Lydiard, you know, it goes back to it, right? You just get the work in. And you had, let's say, like, you almost had it. Did you have a whole year off of racing while you were building back up?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that as well, the issue with Para 10, it misses all the Japanese stuff. Yeah. So I race all the time over here, but there was kind of a period, yeah, through this hip surgery, where, yeah, it was probably a year without racing. And then since coming here, I've loved just hitting the races often. But yeah, I think it shows one or two on Para 10, but it's maybe just like the majors, I think.
Yeah, no, your World Athletics profile as well is similar. Like a lot of the Japanese races won't be on your World Athletics profile. But we're almost there. But I just want to say, when you ran your 63.40, were you 150th in the race? Or is that?
Yeah, I got absolutely battered. And most of those guys, they're students. They're not pros. So that's the thing. Probably 100 of them are college students. It's insane.
That's got to be the deepest. What was the town that was in the city?
Maragame.
I mean, that's got to be the deepest.
Literally the most random, genuinely the most random place in Japan. Nothing else there. Just this dead town. Everyone flies in for this race. This should become like this, yeah, huge event.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that is an extremely deep half. And I think I just wanted to finish on that note and give a bit of context to the racing scene out there as well, especially over the half and the marathon, where you're finishing running those times. I mean, even Copenhagen, 63 minutes, you're on the cusp of a top 20 finish. And it's like, and that's a gold label half marathon. And people are running 58 on the front end of that. And you're there coming 150th in.
And yeah, it definitely helps. Just jump on the train and just hang on.
Yeah. Well, look, mate, best of luck with it all. It is an incredible story. And I think always, in some ways, you always envy these people like yourself who make that leap of faith and do something completely different, something way out of their comfort zone. And I think there's a lot of admiration to, you know, what you are doing, man. So congrats and keep up the good work.
Oh, I appreciate it. I'm sure a lot of people are just thinking, what is this guy? What is he doing? But
yeah, maybe
as long
don't
as they're watching.
Yeah, maybe don't try and replicate, you know, what he is doing, but you are
don't
a success story.
Yeah, yeah. As long as people are watching, tuning into the YouTubes, happy days. Wherever they want to see me break or whatever, it's all good.
And your classic phrase, train harder, not smarter.
Train harder, not smarter. Simple.
We'll finish there, man. Thanks very much, mate.
Nice one. Cheers for having me on.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.